Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have, like, a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
What is up, Nets fans? Welcome to the Brooklyn Buzz, presented by OTGBasketball.com. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me, as always, the Australian great Jack Manuel and special guest, Pete Toll. What's up, guys?
Oh, nothing much. Just glad that you guys have me on here and ready to talk some Brooklyn Nets.
Man, I listen to Pete and Keith's podcast, the NBA Front Office. It's just awesome to finally actually interact with these sort of people that I've become. I'm fanboying out a little bit. Sorry, Pete. It's a bit weird for me here.
Yeah, definitely awesome to have Pete on. It's an honor to get some great insight on the Nets, provide a little bit of different spice from Jack and I. Before we get started, just always a quick reminder, you can check out the show on iTunes, Block Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, and YouTube. But first question, you know, we'll get right into it. Mm-hmm. And this is a question that Nets fans want to hear. You know, they want to know what areas the Nets need to improve to make the playoffs, or are the playoffs completely out of reach?
I think for this year, in my honest opinion, I think the playoffs might be out of reach, but not by far. I think that the main, you know, point for me, number one, is they have to stay healthy, especially D'Angelo Russell, who I know we're going to talk on a little bit more, later on, but that's first and foremost is staying healthy, buying into Kenny Atkinson's system, him being a key player development guy previously with the Hawks and some overseas ventures and things like that. It's key to bringing out the best in the Nets team. So just buying into that system is number two. Number three for me is the consistent shooting percentage. They didn't shoot it horrible, but they weren't the greatest either last season. And that really helped their rebounding numbers. And so I think that this year, if D'Angelo Russell can come in engaged, you have Joe Harris on the perimeter. You have the two draft picks this year as well who can actually shoot the three ball. I think that'll help get more consistent shooting, but it may not help the rebounding numbers. But if there is a rebounding need, you have Ed Davis there who is, you know, really phenomenal in that area. So that and – for me, the last point would be improving the turnover percentage, trying to get in the top 15th, for the league, because they were around, 22nd, I think, in turnovers last season, which, you know, isn't the bottom of the league, but it's not really where you want to be as far as a potential, you know, playoff team, so to speak.
Yeah, in terms of the perimeter numbers, Nick, last year And Pete, last year we were 11th worst in the league. I did a piece for the NBA Analysis Network on sort of what are the three key areas for us to improve. And Pete basically either read my article or I read his thoughts and sort of put it into a piece. Our mark last year was at 35.7%, you know, 19th in the league. We put up the second most in the league as well. Now, Pete, what do you think that number needs to get towards, or where do you think for the Nets to make the playoffs? Do they need to be top 10? Do they need to be top 12? Do they need to shoot 37% from the perimeter? Is there a certain number that sort of, you know, shines out for you?
For me, it would be above, you know, 38%, that range, 38% and above. If they can get in the top 10, that means they're going to more or less probably be in the playoffs.
Yeah.
I think realistically 37% could be, you know, really where they could get to. It's all going to depend on the lineup combinations, how well, you know, health comes into factor, especially, you know, with the perimeter guys in Caris LeVert. Then you've got D'Angelo Russell, then Alan Crabb, of course. Those are the three components. I think you'll see Joe Harris kind of play that specialty role as a shooter, but I wouldn't count on him to be a night in, night out rotation guy. So the other three guys I just mentioned, I think they're going to play consistent key minutes. So that's where I want to see the improvement across the board, you know, perimeter shooting wise.
Yeah.
What about you, Jack? What areas, you know, for the people that haven't read your piece, that you think the Nets need to improve? Anything else you want to add in there?
So I said to take the sort of next step offensively and defensively. So for me, for every team last season, I mentioned this in my piece, every team last season that was in the playoffs was either a top half offensive team in offensive rating or a top half defensive team in defensive rating. Now, I'm not sure which area the Nets look better at. They were bottom 10 or near bottom 10 in both areas. I'm not sure which area they probably have the most room for growth and the highest ceiling, so to speak. Probably offense with this sort of jacked up pace and space system that we have with Coach Kenny. But as well, the additions we've made with Ed Davis, you know, is a decent defender. Jared Allen's only going to grow from there, and Caris LeVert. So I think there's room for growth in both areas of the floor. But I'd be curious to hear what you guys think. If you were to put your money on it, if I was to give you $100 and you were to take it to a betting agency, would you say that the Nets are going to be a better offensive team or defensive team next season?
Oh, good question. I'm going to say offense. That's what I would think.
Yeah, I'm going to go with offense as well. I just think with the talent on the roster, there's not a ton of guys who are like, wow, this guy could really be an elite defender. Where there's other guys in the roster, you look at D'Angelo Russell, I think that's a guy we'll talk about later, but he could make that big jump and be really an offensive piece that could really create things. But talking about playoffs, just given my points out there, I think finishing games is really important. Obviously, you know, Jack and I dealt with a lot of stress last year, you know, some of it being the refs, some of the Nets just turning over the ball. And then just like you guys mentioned, the improved efficiency, not only shooting-wise, but turnover-wise, clean that up. And defensively, they had stretches where they played good defense. It was just consistency. They weren't able to do it throughout the whole season. And the rebounding numbers, like you said, you know, they look a little bit prettier, but I think at certain times there was games where they just got killed on the boards. Hopefully Ed Davis, Kenneth Reed can really help in that area, and improvements from Jared Allen.
Yeah, I think those clutch numbers as well. You know, I looked at the sort of clutch stats in the last sort of couple of minutes of games. We were one of the worst teams in the league. You know, our winning percentage at 38% was only better than four other teams. You know, our field goal percentage as well was terrible in those situations, just under 38%, which was 28th in the league. So I think closing out games that we had, obviously the refereeing, the officiating didn't do us much help in a lot of situations. But there were times where, you know, Spencer Dinwiddie would jack up a bad shot. You know, he would learn from that, and that happened probably more earlier in the season. But yeah, I think with maturity and I think, you know, a season together in Kenny's system as well, I think it's going to do them wonders. And I think they have now sort of veteran pieces that can address those issues.
Yeah, for a team that didn't even reach 30 wins, they had a lot of close games, and that experience should really benefit them. But, Pete, if you had to put a percentage on, I know you said the playoffs are probably out of reach, so it could be a really small, it could even be 0%. What percent would you give the Nets at making the playoffs?
Ooh, I would say maybe 20, 25% making it. I just think that there's other teams that improved well enough that, you know, is going to kind of push the Nets out of it. I think, though, that, you know, they, 28 wins last season is what the Nets won. They could easily go to about the 34 range. So that doesn't put them that far out of the playoffs. It's the other competition that you have to kind of worry about. And I don't know across the board if the Nets have that second tier guy that can really kind of close games. I think that D'Angelo Russell could get there to where he can kind of have a little bit of a takeover moments in the fourth quarter. But I just don't know that there's anyone yet. Maybe Caris LeVert if he gets more experience. But
I knew I liked you, Pete. I knew I liked you. Yeah. Harris is my guy.
Yeah. I think he can get there. I just don't know that he's there yet. And so until they get that bona fide second guy, if Russell's struggling, I think they're a year away.
I think that's completely fair. And definitely, I think that's a big thing is closing out games. Can D'Angelo do that? Can he become consistent? Can he stay healthy? But talking about the Nets young guys, we're going to rank the young core 24 and younger. You know, we could rank them as they are now, top five, and then we could rank them as potential. So we'll start with as they are now, what's the Nets young core look like?
Ooh, let's see. Let's go one to five. I'm going to say I've got D'Angelo Russell one. I've got Caris LeVert two. Jared Allen three. I believe Ronnie Hollis Jefferson fits in there because he is 24, right?
Yep.
So I have him there, and then I butcher names. So is it Rodion's Kurix?
Kurix, yep.
Kurix, yep.
I have him in the last spot, just slightly ahead of Musa, just based on what I saw and for FC Barcelona.
Interesting. Why do you think Rodion's is a little bit higher than Musa? I haven't watched a ton of film on any of those guys. It's mostly just research I'm hearing from other people. But what's the reasoning behind that?
I just think that he has a better shot from mid-range, and then his better focus inside the arc, whereas Musa is a little bit more of a strictly perimeter guy. So I think that coupled with Kurix already has the NBA body and is ready, you know, possibly. I don't think any rookie that comes in is elite defensively or even average defensively. But I think that in time he can become the better defender of the two. So I think I'm, you know, that's kind of what I'm basing it on, just what I saw as far as both of their limited tape that I saw on both. And I don't know. I'm not down on Musa. I just think just based on the two head to head, I give Kurix the edge.
Yeah, it's interesting. I would probably it's hard to say. I think overall as a player, I think Kurix fits better in the NBA system and in Coach Kenny's system. He's a perfect sort of guy, and I think Sean Marks made the perfect decision in sort of locking him up long term for cheap money, because I think he's going to develop into a nice rotation piece and possibly even a starter in two or three seasons. But I think Musa has a high offensive ceiling. You know, we haven't seen. You know, his defensive credibility, you know, guys like, you know, Nick Letourneau, who's done plenty of videos and a lot of his moments on Twitter, showed that his stance, and I think you mentioned on a preview pod that will be coming out for the NBA outlet as well, that, you know, he just needs to be coached a little bit better. And I think both of these guys, you know, will benefit greatly from, you know, great NBA coaching. And as Pete mentioned, the fact that, you know, Coach Kenny is famed for his player development, I think it's going to work wonders on them.
But Jack, what about you? What's your top five currently of the Nets young core?
I would probably go pretty similar with what Pete had. I'd have D'Angelo Russell. I would have Jared Allen slightly above of Caris LeVert. I could almost, I think I mentioned on a previous buzz as well, that Jared Allen could almost be a better version. You know, being at the center position, I think that he can be like a top five center, whereas because the point guard is such a stacked position right now in terms of the elite talent, that D'Angelo Russell will probably be a better player, but in terms of the positional rankings, I think Jared Allen can be better. So I'm going to go D'Angelo, Jarrett, Caris. I'd probably go Rondé as well. And then I will probably go Jahnan just ahead of Rodion's.
Yeah, I'll probably go the same one as you, Jack, except swap, you know, LeVert and Allen. You know, I considered at that point when you said that maybe I'll replace you with Pete, but, you know, we'll let it go for now. But, basing the top five off highest ceiling, you know, who has the most potential we were to rank the top five of the young core?
Most potential, I think.
And it could be a hit or miss. It doesn't guarantee they're going to hit that potential, but who has the highest ceiling, you know, ranking them?
Man, that's tough for me because I'm like you. I like Caris LeVert. I'm going to put Caris LeVert one because I think he fits best as a future small forward. Jared Allen right behind him, because I think he's the cornerstone as the center. I think defensively, athletically, offensively, you know, he can get a little bit better, but defensively, I think he's gonna show improvement this year. That's tough. Three, I still believe in D'Angelo Russell, even though I don't know if he's really a one or a two. Then I'm gonna go Kurix, Musa and Hollis Jefferson last, because I think right now where Hollis Jefferson is about tapping out to where he's going to be a solid starter, but I don't know that he improves anywhere tremendously enough to really take that next leap.
Yeah, I think he's got a very high floor, but his ceiling, like you mentioned, Pete, isn't as high as, you know, basically all the guys that we just mentioned. If I'm going number one, Jared Allen. I mentioned this on a previous buzz that I think he has probably one of the highest ceilings of many rookies in the NBA today, or many young guys. I'd go D'Lo 2. Sorry, Nick, I'm going Karras 3. I'd go Jannan 4, and then probably Rodion's 5, and then, you know, Rondo would be just outside that top 5.
This is a tough one. I think I'm going to just, like, be on the D'Angelo bandwagon by myself. I think I'm going to keep him at number 1 because I just see that vision and that potential and just the impact that guards have in the NBA nowadays. So I'm going to leave D'Angelo 1. But I think his floor is a lot lower than Jared Allen, where I already know what Jared Allen is, and I believe he'll be a starter for the Nets for the next 10 years. I've been saying that for a while. So he'll be number 2. I'll even put my guy Karras at number 3, but I think his floor is very high as well. I just don't know, you know, super high level from the hit, but I wouldn't sleep on him. I don't think the differential would on and Karras LeVert is that much in terms of who can get much higher than the other. And then I'd go with Musa, and I think I'd put RJ there because I do have a little bit of faith in what he can do in terms of adding to his game as a three-point shot. I think he can clean up himself as a handler, and he'll just be in a really weird position, but I don't think he'll ever be an all-star type player. You know, best case scenario for RJ is probably a starter, you know, on a maybe a championship team, a guy that's coming off the bench.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, for me as well, the defensive ceiling of Rondé is one that's really intriguing. You know, it's going to be, is he going to be a versatile perimeter defender? Is he going to be an interior defender? Is he going to be Draymond super duper light? It's interesting to sort of, you know, project that, you know, when you compare him to a guy like a Justice Winslow who is already probably near that really high defensive level of ceiling. Rondé sort of, you know, has improved his offensive game in leaps and bounds last season, but we saw some lapses defensively last season. He was still probably one of our better defenders, but, you know, the Nets weren't anything to ride home about when it came to defense. So I'd like to see him get back to that sort of, not necessarily elite level defense, but, you know, he had high level. He had that one game we talked about before against Portland where he was just, you know, lights out. If we can see 50, 60 games of that from Rondé, then I think that's going to, you know, revolutionize the Nets, you know, defense and offense, for mind you.
Yeah, and the weird thing about Rondé is, you know, in season 1 and 2, you know, in terms of his career, he didn't really show us a ton. And then last year, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, he just adds this offensive game where now he can shoot mid-range, he can work in the post, and he can do a little bit different things. I'm just intrigued to see what Kenny can do with him and just a whole bunch of guys in the staff. Even somebody like a Spencer Dinwiddie and a Joe Harris, you know, somewhat of a late bloomer. I think Kenny and that staff is able to get guys, you know, at a little bit older age and some other coaching staffs can in the league.
Yeah.
Well, that's true, because in Atlanta, he was able to get, you know, good potential out of a bunch of different guys that kind of ended the bench guys. And I think with Rondé, the big question I have, he's kind of that tweener, the 3-4. Yeah. What is he going to be long-term? Is he going to develop into that stretch four role, or is he going to be more of that, you know, kind of the, I hate to say it, but like a Wesley Johnson type where he is stuck in that tweener role, and hopefully he's better than Wesley Johnson.
Yeah, I hope.
But just kind of stuck in that tweener role, and I don't know where he would fit. If he is a small forward, I don't know how he would fit necessarily long term with Brooklyn. But if he is developing that 3-point shot, or at least, you know, consistently hitting it for the next season or two, then I think he can develop into that stretch four role and fit perfectly long term.
Yeah, and like Pete was saying, like, you know, if Rondé doesn't develop that three, it has to be almost a perfect situation where maybe your center is knocking down threes, or you have a lot of spacing in other parts of the floor where you don't have to worry about him as much being that stretch four. I think one thing that might benefit Rondé a little bit is just the way the NBA is going, positionless, but obviously in some situations you still need a true four and whatnot.
Yeah.
But going back to D'Angelo, what is best case scenario for D'Angelo Russell? Obviously, this is the big ticket for the Nets franchise. Obviously, like I mentioned before, guard play is so important in the NBA. What do you guys think is his best case scenario if he were to max out?
If he maxes out, it's all-star. I mean, I think that's pretty clear, especially in the Eastern Conference now that you know, have the big shift to where everybody seems to be going west, especially, you know, with LeBron. It kind of gets him out of the way. With D'Angelo, I think that, you know, him staying, like I said earlier, staying healthy is the big thing. His shooting percentage has to go up because he barely shot you know, over 40% in his first 3 years. Last year, coming off at 32% from three. That was, I think, because he was injured, trying to fit into the offense, figure out basically where he fit, whether it was, you know, coming off the bench or starting. I think also he, you know, everybody says they work on their body in the offseason, so I'd take that with a grain of salt. But, you know, being that the reports say he has worked on his body, kind of getting more muscle, that's going to help him, you know, drive to the hole more, help his confidence. Because I think with the injured knee, I think that really hindered him as far as from a mental standpoint. So now his, you know, ability to finish at the rim, he already was pretty decent finishing at the rim, you know, previous. Now I think it goes to another level when he's not thinking about that knee, kind of second guessing it. And then lastly, if he can work on that 3-point shot and get it up to 37%, 38% consistently, then I think that's really going to put pressure on the defenses. And his court vision's already there. We saw that at Ohio State, you know, coming out. I think one area I don't know that he's worked on a ton, and I don't really know, you know, NBA training wise, how you can really, you know, enhance it, but his foot speed, because I don't know that he's fast enough to really get by elite guards with quick speed, like the John Walls, the Aaron Foxes, you know, like those kind of guys. So he has to work on his craftiness of finding, you know, the ability to hit the pull up mid range, you know, kind of crafty footwork getting inside to be able to finish around taller defenders. So I think if he does, you know, those things, obviously, you know, he'd be an all-star, but that would be the goal, I think, for both D'Angelo and Brooklyn.
Yeah, I did a piece, a little hot take for OCGBasketball.com, the hot take marathon. Check it out, guys. That I think he can be an all-star. I think, you know, in terms of the fan vote, you know, when it comes to that, you know, D'Lo has all the fans in the world. You know, despite being injured last season, he was still top 20 in fan vote and, you know, was almost beating Goran Dragic, who made the all-star team as an injury replacement. I think for him to be an all-star as well, the Nets need to win some games. Before his injury, he was averaging, you know, nearly 21-5-5, which is, you know, elite numbers, you know, nearly 35% from three. I think if he would average out over a full season, you know, that would be an insane return for us. And if he would average those numbers going into the All-Star, I think that he would almost make it. Now, I think if he keeps that up, obviously, you know, his effectiveness in terms of turnovers, in terms of, like, you know, just reading the floor a little bit better, and his maturity and leadership, all these things that he's aiming to be better at, and I think he's going to be better at, you know, going into a contract year of sorts. I think the 3-point shot, in terms of the ability to sort of use that sort of foot speed that he lacks, I think when you look at guys like James Harden and all these guys who aren't, you know, quote unquote athletic, you know, they have other ways that sort of they can maneuver their way around. You know, James Harden has one of the best handles in the league. I believe in D'Lo's hand. I think he's probably got to tighten up a little bit, get that sort of quick first step that James Harden can do and create space in ways. But I think, you know, there's all the tools there for D'Lo to become an all-star and maybe even a multi-time all-star, which will probably be his ceiling.
Yeah, pretty much everything you guys said. And I thought Pete brought up a great point about his body. You know, working this offseason, Kenny's brought up on interviews too, is that he does need to work on his body and he'll look more confident with his knee. Just a little stats too. You know, in the first 12 games of the season when he was in full stride, like Jack mentioned, you know, 25-5, he was averaging over 5 free throw attempts a game. He finished the season with a little bit just under 3. And I think when you watched him come back from injury, he didn't look as confident. He wasn't getting as much inside. And obviously some of that was with the knee. And I think adding muscle is not only going to help him, you know, feel more healthy, but he should be a touch more explosive. You know, I'm not expecting him to be like John Wall fast or anything, but I do expect him to pick it up a little bit, add on some more muscle, and I think that should really help him. And I'd like to see him take advantage of his frame. You know, he is 6'5". He has good length. You know, he can use that to his advantage when he's dealing with some of the faster guards. So like you guys said, I think all-star guard is definitely potential and a guy that can put up big numbers and really be a cornerstone for this Nets franchise.
If you were guys, like, this is obviously a way out hypothetical, what can he reach as, like, with sort of as a positional rank? Like, if we're talking like Kemba Walker's sort of on that sort of fringes of being like top 10, top 12 point guard in the league, is D'Lo in that sort of realm of where his ceiling can be, or is he in that sort of next level above with guys like, you know, John Wall, who are just outside the top 5 with like Russell Westbrook and Stephen Curry? Because I don't think right now, from what he's shown, he has the ability to be, you know, a transcendent NBA point guard, but he certainly has, you know, elements that you can sort of go, well, maybe he can sort of reach this ceiling.
I'm not going to put him. I don't think he's ever going to get to that elite level where you have John Wall, you've got Steph Curry, Westbrook, you know, those kind of guys. I think he, if everything falls right, health, you know, development, you know, everything from that standpoint, I think he can get to that tier behind him. Like you said, that Kemba Walker, where it's a, you're going to be an all-star. You could be a multi-time all-star, but you're not going to be that guy where it's like hands down, like teams are so scared to play you because you're that superstar, you know, on the floor. But I think he's going to have, you know, matchups to where he can really shine brighter than others. It's just that the maturity for me, I think, is somewhere like he could improve as far as from a mindset standpoint. And that goes, you know, to the locker room, to how you carry yourself on the court when things don't go your way. And I think also, like I mentioned earlier, the foot speed, not just from an offensive standpoint, being able to get by guys and things like that, laterally, you know, being able to move defensively is going to be where he's going to have to improve as well. So those things are key for me to push him up kind of that ladder as far as the upper echelon point guards.
Yeah, I think you guys are spot on. Probably top 10, not getting into that top five. You know, he's only 22 years old, so there is always, you know, some unforeseen things that could happen to him. But due to the lack of foot speed, like Pete mentioned, the lack of athleticism, I think it could hinder him a touch. And, you know, I wouldn't be super somehow he ended up in the top five at some point in his career, you know, maybe as a peak, but most likely it's in that top 10. What do you think, Jack?
Yeah, I was probably going to say, but Kemba Walker, if you look at him, franchise point guard for the Charlotte Hornets right now, looking to probably get a max contract from them or get traded out. Who knows what could happen there. But, you know, Kemba Walker is very underrated and is, you know, a multi-time all-star and can do so many different things. Is a closer, you know, as sort of Pete mentioned, we want D-Lo to become a closer of sorts for us. A guy who can just get a bucket on any sort of occasion. I think that there's nothing wrong with that ceiling for him. And I think, you know, he has sort of it's a higher passing ceiling than Kemba Walker right now. I think we've talked about it in spurts about, you know, his elite court vision. You know, some of his passing is, you know, remarkable. Very, very high level. And yeah, he can be maybe top five in that area. But in terms of the fact that he has other weaknesses in terms of foot speed and defensive lateral quickness and all those other things, that probably takes him down. So it depends on how his floor is on some of his weaknesses, like if he can, you know, sort of tighten that up a little bit and if he can continue to sort of hone those really elite skills that he possesses.
And I think sometimes doing a little bit of the dirty work, you know, you see somebody like Steph Curry, who's not an elite defender, but he puts in a ton of effort and he just plays great team defense. I don't know if he'll ever be the defender that Curry is, not saying he's amazing, but he just does enough to do the right things. And I think D'Angelo, another thing is, you know, what type of shooter is he? You know, we don't really know because he's so inconsistent. One game you'll see him, he'll knock down 7 threes. The next game he might go 0 of 7. So I think if we can kind of find some in between, have a better idea of what he is from three, what he is from mid-range, can that get consistent? It's so hard to predict somebody who's only 22 years old. And I know a lot of us have talked about is, you know, his time in L.A. was kind of a mess. You know, he had to deal with Kobe the first season, the whole Nick Young situation the second season, and now last year he dealt with the injury.
Yeah, and the thing with D'Angelo is he's really going to have to push his development because if you look at it, coming down the pike is going to be the age limit is going to change for the draft. So you're going to have guys even younger, even hungrier to prove, you know, the point. So you're going to have a really, you know, new kind of era of guards coming in. And so it's going to be tough. So for me, the next 2 years are going to be where D'Angelo really has to make his mark. If he doesn't do it in the next 2 years, then I don't know that's going to happen. And especially this season, Brooklyn's going to know if he's a cornerstone piece or not and whether they need to go in another direction, which is a good thing with free agency coming over the summer. But, you know, if D'Angelo does turn into someone as a cornerstone, then that's great for Brooklyn and the fan base and, of course, D'Angelo himself. But then that also allows you to work in other areas and fill the team, you know, knowing that you already have a bona fide star.
Exactly. Yeah. I think it's such a huge year, like you said, not only for D'Angelo and where he's at, and he just saw his boy Devin Booker get paid, but it's a big year for the Nets because they need to know what's going to happen next year in the offseason. They're going to have cap space. Now they could have even more cap space if they don't plan on, you know, giving D'Angelo big money, and they could go after a Kyrie Irving. But if D'Angelo looks like he's going to be a star for the future, you know, you might second guess that and go after somebody more so like a Jimmy Butler or Tobias Harris, or maybe even get lucky with a Kawhi or a KD or something. So definitely really intriguing on all aspects for D'Angelo. But let's talk Nets lineups. What we're going to do is we'll look at it for best three-point shooting, the best defensive, and the best offensive. Which one do you guys want to start with?
Overall, we'll start overall first. I think it's best to start from the top.
Okay, best overall Nets lineup next season. This doesn't have to be starting lineup, just, you know, maybe closing lineup or the one that you think will have the best success on the floor.
For me, I think the best success is going to be Jared Allen at the five, Rondé at the four. You put Caris LeVert at the three, Allen Crabbe at the two for the shooting, and that could be interchangeable, but I think he really fits best at the two. You could interchange it with Joe Harris if you really needed a three-point shooter, but I think I'm a huge Allen Crabbe guy, so I really still believe in him. And then D'Angelo Russell at the one.
Yeah, we're all crab people in the Brooklyn buzz, my friends. I would probably have the same lineup, but I'd question Caris right now until maybe mid-season if he's proven that he can be very capable defensively. I'd probably sub in Damari Carroll. So I think that's basically our starting lineup as well. But I think Damari gives us, you know, a lot of leadership, a lot of cool heads. You know, he's been around the way. I think in terms of closing games, he was one of our better players. You know, he would make plays. He just knows how to do the right thing considering the situation on both sides of the floor. But I definitely think that that is our best, probably by the end of the season. I'm hoping that that's our best closing lineup. And yeah, Joe Harris in any situation for me is always good.
Yeah, mine's pretty similar to Pete. The only thing I would maybe consider, depending on what we see from Rondé, would maybe swap him out with Carroll and play him at the, you know, small ball four. Yep. But, you know, I think either way you go with that. I like D'Angelo. I like LeVert. I like Crabbe. And I think LeVert's going to take a jump as a three-point shooter. And he also provides D'Angelo with another ball handler where he doesn't have all the pressure on him and he can kind of relieve the load. And, you know, it'll kind of allow Crabbe to kind of hit his highest peak. Pete, you said you're a big Crabbe guy. And obviously there's been a decent amount of criticism for the Nets taking on the Crabbe contract and not getting any assets. What do you think will be his, you know, numbers this season? What do you think's best case scenario for him this season with the Nets?
I think he can easily be around, you know, the 14 point mark, you know, consistently. It's going to come down to how much he's pushed, I think, because I think Crabbe's a guy that really has to kind of, it's sad to say, but kind of be pushed by competition to really be motivated to stay consistent. Because I think in what I've seen is some games he can be a little bit complacent and not really look to be aggressive. So I think with Caris LeVert there on the wing, I think that's going to help him, you know, really kind of fend, you know, Caris off for minutes. And then you've got Joe Harris in there for situational minutes. But I think he can ultimately be a solid long-term starter in the league as a shooting guard. I think he can actually play some three a little bit, but I like him best at the two. And then you play Caris at the three.
Yeah, I liked his sort of defensive acumen that was developing over the season. You know, when he wasn't his sort of lights out best self, you know, he still shot almost 38% from range last year, but he still showed nights of good energy on both ends of the floor. You know, 10th most threes last year, and this is, you know, going straight from a tweet that I put out. You know, 13 games where he made five threes or more. I think, you know, if he can get back to being an elite three-point shooter, and like you said, Pete, having that confidence, you know, Nick's mentioned plenty of times the fact that he didn't have a training camp, didn't have a summer to sort of work himself into the system. I think that's going to do him wonders. And I think, yeah, Allen Crabbe is going to, he's going to need to prove his worth somewhat to an extent as well, because, you know, we've bet on him and I think, you know, he's going to repay that faith.
Yeah, and you look at certain points in the season, you know, after, you know, more so in the 2018 portion, he looked a lot more confident and a lot more comfortable. So hoping for big things for Crabbe. And talking about Crabbe, best three-point shooting lineup.
Ooh, so I'd have Russell at the one. I'd put Joe Harris at the two, put Crabbe at the three. I'd put Damari Carroll at the four. At the five, you don't really – you need to have somebody rebounding. I'm going to go with I like Ed Davis in there just to be able to snag rebounds and you know, help out defensively.
Yeah, I love that five spot. You know, if Jared Allen does develop there as a rebounder, I think he'll be there. He's probably a better three-point shooter mechanically-wise, and, you know, Kenneth Reed shot a couple in this offseason, according to some Twitter videos. But I would actually have Shabazz Napier in there. I'll probably go D'Lo, Shabazz, Joe, and this has gone super-duper small, mind you, Joe, Alan Crabb, and then Ed Davis. I think those are our best three-point shooters. You know, Caris LeVert mechanically looks as good as D'Lo, but I think consistency-wise, we want D'Lo to be that guy, so we've got to keep him out there. And Damari obviously could play maybe like small ball four, so you can certainly interchange guys, but Joe Harris and Alan Crabb are our two best three-point shooters, you know, without a doubt. So I think they have to be in there. And I think Shabazz is underrated in that sort of respect. And I think playing alongside D'Lo, he will get plenty of open looks. And, you know, I put out a tweet that sort of, you know, got some nice traction about the fact that he is one of the better catch-and-shoot players when it comes to backup point guards.
So I went crazy. I went like 2K crazy. I don't know how the Nets will put, I don't know if the Nets will put this on the floor, but it would be fun. I went Shabazz, Joe Harris, Alan Crabb, Jared Dudley, and then Mari played a little bit at small ball five last year, obviously for like few minute stretches, but all those guys are really good 3-point shooters, and that would be super fun.
Nice.
Sweet.
But I don't think Kenny's going to put it out there. But you never know. He gets a little bit wacky with his lineups. Defensively, best lineup the Nets can throw out there.
Defensively, I think I'm going to – right now, because we don't know if Jared Allen is going to improve there. So I've got to slot in Ed Davis. I put at the four, I would put Kenneth Faried. I like his defensive hustle, his ability to rebound and then get out in transition. Small forward. I like Travion Graham.
That's a good pick
from Charlotte. I just think that he's got untapped potential that, you know, he's kind of obviously, you know, buried in Charlotte just because of their wing depth. And, you know, not that he's going to play a ton of minutes necessarily for Brooklyn, but I think he can really get his untapped potential defensively. He's already good now getting a you know, player development guy and Kenny Atkinson, you know, to kind of, you know, push him up, I guess, so to speak, can really elevate his defensive game even more. Shooting guard. I don't know. Shooting guard would have to probably be, I'm going to say I like the versatility of Caris LeVert and just the way he's able, you know, his length and just the way he's able to move on the floor a little bit better. And then at point guard, I'm going Spencer Dinwiddie.
I'm literally going the exact same lineup, Pete. I think Spencer Dinwiddie showed last season, you know, some real strides on the defensive end. I think there was, he was asked a lot of him on both ends of the floor. And that's why we saw some, you know, inconsistency in terms of field goal percentage and stuff. You know, talked about Caris LeVert's versatility and, you know, his growing sort of, you know, potential on that side of the floor. You know, he's got all the physical tools and, you know, he's been working in the offseason. I think that, you know, as well, Travion Graham, you know, any of our guys at OTG Basketball, Evan Dyle, Dylan Jackson, they were, you know, really sad to see him leave. You know, he's also got that 3-and-D potential as well, you know, shooting over 40% from there last year. Kenneth Farida's great hustle. I'm probably chucking Damari Carroll over him, partly because I think Kenneth Farid can be a bit of a rebound hunter, and I think his energy can sometimes work against him. You know, he might be, you know, hunting rebounds when he should be sort of focusing on the man-to-man defense, where I think Damari can make the right plays and is a good enough defender to sort of make up for that. And Ed Davis is probably, you know, one of our best defensive players, if not our best defensive player right now, you know, in terms of pick-and-roll defense, in terms of protecting the rim, defensive rebounding, you know, he's an absolute stud.
So mine's pretty similar to you guys. My theme for my lineup is switchability. You know, I'm big. Jack knows spacing and switching. So I got Dinwiddie, LeVert, Carroll, RHJ, and I'm high on Jared Allen. You know, you guys are right. Ed Davis is probably better right now, but I think by the time the season comes along and the work he's kind of put in behind the scenes because no one ever really talks about him, I think Jared Allen. And through this lineup, you know, these guys can literally switch on a lot of different positions. You know, we've seen Dinwiddie switch onto some fours at times. Obviously, RHJ, very versatile. Caris LeVert, Carroll's talked about him being able to probably play 1 through 4. And Jared Allen, we saw him pick up Dennis Schroeder at points in the year. So I think this would be a really switchable lineup, and that's what I'm all about defensively, especially in the NBA nowadays.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, I think for me, with looking at Allen, I think, you know, defensively, he's got to obviously get a little bit more physical.
Yeah, muscle.
That's you know, number one. Number two, he's going to have to get out of his habit of staying under the rim and kind of waiting on people to come to him. I think he's got to be able to move without, like, kind of hedging the gap, so to speak, without leaving, you know, the rim wide open. And I think if he's able to do that and improve on his 1.2 blocks per game, obviously that's going to, you know, tremendously help Brooklyn. And I think having a mentor in Ed Davis there, then you have a guy like Jared Dudley, who's, you know, not obviously a key, you know, defensive guy, but just his experience, you know, mentoring the bigs in Phoenix and back when he was in LA and, you know, Milwaukee. I think just his locker room presence is really going to make a difference on this team.
Yeah, and I 100% agree, Pete. I think, you know, we saw Jared Allen kind of sit back at times where he's, you know, more athletic than a lot of bigs in this league, that he could have came out more. And I'm confident that he has the ability, that he just needs to kind of get the confidence and kind of get some veteran leadership to kind of show him how to do it and kind of tell him what to do. And I think player development-wise, with the coaching and the players, will help him in that area. But offensively, best lineup the Nets can chuck out there.
Offensively, from a scoring standpoint, it would be – I would say put Shabazz Napier at the one, Russell at the two. I'm going to go like you did just a little bit ago with a little 2K, kind of just throw a random lineup out there. But I think Russell at the two, or you can interchange them really. Then you've got I like Caris LeVert at the three. As you can see, I'm high on Caris LeVert as well. Then I'm going to go with even though he's undersized to play the four, I'm going to throw out Allen Crabb at the four.
Yes.
I like the shooting ability just from the perimeter and just having all the scores you can. And then at the five, I like the versatility of being able to play pick and roll, get lobs from Jared Allen. So.
Yeah, I'm literally the same. I'd probably – you could interchange maybe Damari Carroll to have some, like, ridiculously three-point shooting in terms of our spacing. But I think Jared Allen, even Kenneth Faried as a sort of vertical option in terms of in the pick and roll, I think, you know, him, D'Lo, him and Shabazz, whatever you want, you chuck either of those two guys there. I think the offensive spacing and in terms of the verticality that they possess would be, you know, pretty insane. We saw so many awesome things from Jared Allen and Caris LeVert in the pick and roll last year. I'm looking forward to seeing some development from D'Angelo and Jared in that sense as well, them developing a nice little synergy. So, you know, I think Jared Allen's going to be out there as well.
Yeah, I really like that lineup, and mine's almost exactly the same. This, a Jack will probably like this. The only swap I'd make is Napier for Joe Harris, because then you have two elite shooters and, you know, Harris and Crabb, if Crabb's get that number back up to 40%. And I think LeVert, honestly, he has a little bit of a mean streak in him. You know, you mentioned in that Slam article we saw earlier this year, you know, he can be a little bit tougher, and at times he's willing to kind of get down there and bang a little bit. He has pretty good length. So I think that would be a really fun lineup and just a ton of scoring. Defensively would have some issues, but it would be fun.
It's interesting that, like, all the sort of lineups we're talking about have some sort of viability. And I think, you know, if we were talking about this on the Buzz last year, you know, if we had Pete on, it'd be hard to sort of press to say, you know, all these sort of different sort of names you could chuck out there. You know, we didn't have an Ed Davis or Shabazz Napier, any of these sort of NBA-ready guys, even a Trevion Graham, who in certain situations would be, you know, certainly helpful. So I think now having that depth is going to be, you know, a huge asset for the Nets. So I think they're one of the deeper teams, especially in the Eastern Conference.
And it should help a lot. Like, you know, we mentioned, you know, Pete mentioned earlier injuries being a concern. Last year they had injuries and they had really no one to bring in. Now they at least can bring in some NBA guys instead of guys that are on two-way contracts or G League call-ups and whatnot. So I feel a lot more confident if somebody were to go down.
Yeah, you place Milton Doyle, James Webb, Isaiah Whitehead with Ed
Quincy
Davis. Yeah, replace all those guys with Shabazz Napier, Ed Davis, Kenneth Faried, Jared Dudley, Trevion Graham. But those are automatically NBA-ready replacements. A lot of those guys outside of maybe Quincy Acey just weren't NBA-ready guys, and they just couldn't do it night in, night out at an NBA, you know, elite NBA level. Whereas all those guys that we've mentioned have done it and have proven it before, you know, albeit to different extents.
That's why those guys are now overseas. Each one of them had signed a contract overseas. So we'll see. I think Whitehead might have a chance if he can develop.
I think he'll be back. Yeah.
I think he can come back. Yeah. Yep.
He's got some major grit to his game, and I think that's something an NBA teams can always appreciate. You have a guy that comes with that type of energy, and he's not really backing down against anyone. It, like Jack and I mentioned on an earlier show, it was sad to see him go, but you completely understood why, and it made plenty of sense.
Yeah. Right. I think just real quick, speaking of somebody to go, the reason I want to make a disclaimer, the reason why I didn't really have Damari Carroll in a lot of my lineups is I think he's the most viable trade candidate to me on the team. I think it just makes sense. You know, if the Nets aren't, you know, if they don't start out of the gate hot, basically, you know, you can assess over your first 20 games whether you're going to be in playoff contention or not, or at least for the most part. And I think that that's really going to kind of, I know he's Kenny Atkinson's guy and had been in the past, but I think overall he would make sense if the Brooklyn does struggle. I think he would make sense to be a trade candidate for sure.
What do you think the Nets could get for him?
Ooh, good question. I mean, they would want back, you know, somebody that, you know, is of a defensive mindset. So I think a mid-tier like small forward they'd have to get back. That's not really somebody that would potentially come in knowing that they're going to have a starting role, more of a spark off the bench. Because I think overall you want that starting role to go to Karis long term. And I think, you know, like a mid-tier player and maybe a second rounder. I don't think anything more than that, you know, honestly.
Do you think they could get a late first with the right team? You know, we're talking bottom five of the first round.
Yeah, but who would want to take him? And
he's an expiring, which does help his case.
Yeah, but I mean, ooh, that's a good question. I don't know. Honestly, looking at it, and I'm not the guy to ask as far as assets, because I've seen some deals go down where I'm like, wow, how did they get that for him? kind of thing. But I don't know that they get a first rounder out of it. You know, that's just my opinion.
Yeah, I think it would be reaching slightly. If we're sort of comparing, I think teams like New Orleans, teams like Detroit that are sort of in need of a wing vet presence, and teams who were linked to Damari in the past probably aren't going to be willing to give up such a high asset. But I think Detroit's probably more likely in that sort of sense in terms of their front office incapabilities of sorts. Obviously, Stan Van's gone, but they've got Dwayne as sort of the head coach now. So, but I think, you know, if New Orleans, what they gave for Nikola Mirotic, if Damari can continue his form and, you know, stay as a starter, prove himself, you know, Houston could be linked to him as well. I think Zach Lowe brought that up, and we've brought it up before on The Buzz. I think, you know, Houston could probably give up maybe a first rounder if, you know, Melo happens to just like flame out. They get nothing out of James Dennis, and they're just left with an absolute gap at the wing. It's just like PJ Tucker and just like no one else. Obviously, losing Trevor Ariza, I think Damari Carroll would be a ready-made replacement there. So if you see, you know, desperate times for Houston, you know, coming into the trade deadline around February and that all-star sort of break, that's probably the highest level of sort of return that I think we could get from a team like them.
Yeah, I could see Portland or the Spurs as well. Yeah,
yep.
I'd like him on the Spurs. I don't know why. I just like that vibe. But do you guys think that Spencer Dinwiddie could get traded? Do you think that's a possibility, Pete? Or do you think the Nets are going to look to hold on to him?
See, I would hold on to him if I'm Brooklyn, because I like how he's kind of that change of pace, but he's able to play at multiple paces, and he's smart. And that's what you want, because you don't know with D'Angelo Russell if he's actually going to pan out or not. I would give it another year. If D'Angelo, say he is an all-star, then you're going to have to kind of think next summer, like, hey, we might have to move off of Spencer. But I don't think you do it right now, because he's your number one. He's your insurance policy. Number two, you know, he actually is a good player, despite what, you know, people kind of laugh last year. Like, who is this guy? Like, he got cut from the Bulls. Like, he's not any good. And, you know, come to find out, he's actually really good.
If he continues his form, I'm going to keep chucking the questions at you, Pete. He's obviously on this really, really, you know, team-friendly contract, to say the least, probably one of the best contracts in the league before Nikola Jokic signed his extension. If you're Sean Marks and, you know, you take out of the consideration the possible free agency, what does a team, or what did the Nets re-sign him for in terms of, you know, millions of dollars, in terms of, you know, length, so to speak, if he continues, you know, his, you know, consistency in that trajectory?
I mean, I think he could easily get, you know, $12 million a year just based on if he improves at the rate that he's at now. I think that's realistic to ask for. I don't think he's a break the bank type player by any means. I think that, you know, he's that serviceable guy that you could start in a pinch, but he's going to be more of the guy that anchors your bench unit. And I mean, I don't think in today's market, I don't think $12 million a year is a lot to ask for that, because you have some NBA starters right now that are getting a lot more than that, that I don't think are worth the contracts and aren't necessarily, you know, whether it's based on health or some other reasons, at the level that Spencer Dinwiddie could be at if he continues to improve.
Yeah, I think that's really fair. And I think there would be probably a market for him just because there is a chance for an improvement. And like you said, he's a solid guard, you know, top three in most improved voting last year. Interesting to see how Dinwiddie and D'Lo can gel this year. You know, last year we didn't see a lot of positive results. This year I'll be really intrigued to see how that gels.
Yeah, and there's tons of openings too. I mean, because if you really look across the board, Orlando, I don't know what they're doing.
Yeah, that's the first team that came to mind with Orlando.
I don't know what they're doing, kind of banking on Jerry and Grant kind of being the backup to DJ Augustin. Like, that doesn't make sense to me. And then I'm not an Elfrid Payton guy because I just don't like point guards that can't shoot. And I've never been high on Elfrid Payton to begin with. So those are two teams that are key right there. And then Miami, depending on what happens with Goran Dragic, you know, and you've got Tyler Johnson, who they're trying to get off of, but they don't really have a backup de facto point guard. And I think he could fit there, you know, for some nice money as well.
Yeah, I think Phoenix would be another one as well. You know, is Devin Booker going to turn into James Harden? Is, you know, Coach Igor Kokoschkov going to go, okay, we're going to make you a sort of floor general? You know, it could happen. I'm not saying it can't, but at the same time, I don't know who their sort of point guard, you know, de facto sort of pure one is in that sort of situation. So that we just rattle off, you know, three or four teams that could easily use his services. And, you know, you look at what the Marcus Smart signed for 4 years, $50 million, with the cap only going to go up in the next 2 years. I think that that could be pretty team friendly for a team, whether it's the Nets or others that sort of look to sign him.
For sure. Jack, any last questions for Pete before we get out of here?
Now, give us a final season prediction. We've done ours on the outlet. We're going to be doing it on the Buzz further, Pete. But what do you think? Where did the Nets finish in the standings? What do you see as their win total? And do you see sort of D'Lo being an all-star? What do you sort of think like the big sort of takeaways from the Nets this season?
I think that D'Angelo Russell has a chance to be an all-star. I don't know that he makes it because I think there's a couple other players that are a little bit higher on.
Ben Simmons and Mike last year. Yeah,
across the board. I think realistically for the Nets, as far as finishing in the standings, I think they're going to obviously finish. I think Atlanta's going to be the worst. Orlando's not going to be any good. The Knicks are going to struggle without Porzingis. Chicago's going to kind of struggle with, you know, the core that they have trying to figure things out there. I think they're going to be above those teams. Then it's going to come down to, are they going to be better than Charlotte? Are they going to be better than Detroit? Are they going to be better than Cleveland? Those are kind of the teams that I have in the mix with Brooklyn. And it could fall either way. You know, one of those teams could, you know, Brooklyn could exceed expectations and end up eighth in the East, or they could end up, you know, 11th in the East. I have them kind of, to me, I think just based roster-wise, looking at it on paper, I think they're going to be in the 10-11 range, but that's not anything to shake your head at, because that means that it's going to be a marginal improvement from the 28 wins last year. I think their ceiling is around 38, 39 wins, but realistically, I'm going to put them right at 34.
Yep. All fair.
Yeah, I think that's really fair. And Pete, tell everyone where they can find you and find your work.
Sure. You can find me on Twitter. It's at Pete Toll MBA. So it's PETETOALMBA. And I co-host the NBA Front Office Show, which is with my buddy Keith Smith. And then we have our producer slash sometimes co-host Connor Rell. You can find the Front Office podcast on Stitcher, iTunes, a couple other podcast platforms that we have as well. You can just search it on Twitter as well. It's at Front Office Show on Twitter. And we're always bringing out new content. We deep dive into each player on the roster. We go all the way down to the two-way contract guys and go in depth there. So it's kind of unique to what anybody else does. And so I think it, you know, is a good listen for anybody that wants something different and new.
Yeah, really good show. If you guys want some deep insight and provide you with even more detail, you know, on all the teams in the NBA, which I think is really cool, is that it's not only one team specific. They literally talk about all 30 teams. So it's a great show. Check that out. And as always, Jack, thank you for hopping on. Pete, happy to have you on. First time for the Buzz. Definitely looking forward to talking to you more. And you can check out the show on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, and YouTube.
Yeah, thank you so much again, guys, for having me. I really enjoyed it and look forward to the next time.
Kill it, Pete.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.